I made this combination of two recipes with a piece of Alaskan king salmon fillet and seared in a pan. And I had this glaze made with honey and lemon juice and soy sauce and a few other things, you know, and cooked that in a separate vessel. Then I combined them for lunch and it was very tasty.
You sure do know your way around ingredients and what you like to put in stuff. Really good with that. Anyway, I'm in front of Applebee's. We're going to go eat, so we'll catch you later. KG2RY, KD2OGB Mobile, we're clear.
KG2OGB Mobile, 73, have a great day. KG2RY. This is KD2 UDU listening on the ride home.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the WGAL repeater. Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2VL repeater.
KD2AKX suggestion.
W2VL.
You're accessing the repeater. I mean, you got the scratchy scratchies, as they call it, you know, but definitely copyable. You know, it's not, you know, solid copy, but, you know, a little noisy. You said low power, so I guess maybe, I don't know where you are, but maybe to be expected.
Actually about 50% static, 50% audio. You sound all right, though.
KD2KNH, this is KD2UAH. Okay, thank you. I'm actually working at the base station, and I have a couple of different antennas. I was just trying out this tri-band antenna that I have for 220, but I guess it doesn't really work that well on 2 meters, even though it's supposed to be a tri-band. I noticed a lot of noise on 2 meters. I'm going to try it on 70. Centimeters and see how that works out, but on 220 it's working beautifully. I got like a 1.2 WR. Thank you, KD2KNH. This is KD2UAH. I'm just going to stay on the side for a little bit.
All right, good luck with your antenna work. I'll be on the road for a few minutes yet if you need another radio check. So KD2KNH, standing by.
KD2KNH, call me on the phone, KD2OGB Mobile.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W.
AA2TS Mobile. driver, for me.
Ah, good evening. Name here is Bob.
Good evening, Bob. The name is Alan, Alpha Lima Alpha. And you see, I do believe we've fought these, but not probably for a few weeks or months.
Okay, it's a little noisy on my end here, but I should be getting to a place where it gets somewhat better.
Okay, well, you're doing pretty well here. I'm in Queens, Douglas in Queens on foot, so I'm hitting the repeater, W2VO repeater at North Shore Towers.
All right, so you're pedestrian mobile someplace.
Yeah, right, yeah, I will be hitting Northern Boulevard in about 2 minutes, and then walking west on Northern Boulevard from Douglaston through Bayside.
All right, I know the area. Between the Wendy's and the Burger King, I've eaten in that general area quite a bit.
Yeah, I try and stay away from both. I don't think the insides can take it too much anymore.
Yeah, I probably should too, but when I was working, sometimes I get stuck late coming out of the city, and I'd stop there and grab something to eat.
Yeah, okay, well, now.
Alright. Yeah, now I'm down lower here in the town that I live in. I'm out in Glen Cove up on the North Shore, and I'm going to be going behind the hill. So I'll drop out of the repeater a bit when I get there, and then once I get out the other side, I go uphill and I'll get better.
Okay, well, I'll keep listening. I mean, I go through some lower areas on Northern Boulevard, so my signal may go up and down also.
I wouldn't think it would be too bad from there, because if you got any kind of elevation at all, you got a straight shot at Glen Oaks.
Yeah, I usually do pretty well in this repeater, but I think the last time I was on, I was having trouble full quieting the repeater. I don't know if it was me or there was a problem with the repeater. I just have a 518A2HT, and I can hit a repeater in about from here. Just with the...
Alright, I'm behind the hill right now, so give me a minute and I'll be out.
Okay, very good, WA2.
Okay, this should be better, W2OSR.
Okay, that's a bit better. You didn't hear too much there.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of where the heck... There was a restaurant I used to go up to over in that general area when I was dating. It was called the Amber Lantern, but I don't remember exactly where it was.
Oh, the Amber Lantern is a couple of miles... was, I would say. A couple of miles west of that sort of Flushing Broadway, about 160 seconds. It hasn't been around for about 20 years, but some of the guys, my original club, the Two Borough Club, used to love that, and I did eat there a few times when it was around. I think there was some sort of a hall also.
Yeah, as I remember, the food was fairly good, and it wasn't terribly expensive. Let's see, I got married 28 years ago, so we're going back probably about 50 years.
Yeah, well, you got me by 8 years. I'm coming up on 40 in about, actually in exactly 2 weeks, so I have to get a card else for the XYL. So, thanks.
Yeah, Well, my wife's birthday is this month on the 24th, and our wedding anniversary is next month on the 29th.
Yeah, we're August 16th. We got 19, the fourth anniversary.
Yeah, I got married back in 73. Met my wife out in the Southampton area.
Yeah, very good. I met my wife at a singles weekend in the hotel. We were both in the swimming pool, blind without our glasses, and we thought we recognized each other. It happened, and that was the beginning of a romance.
Laughing because I'm thinking to myself, well, love is blind, they tell me.
Yeah, we certainly were when we met.
Yeah, okay. I don't know, is that place still around up there?
The Concord Hotel is not. The golf course is. I don't know how many, if any, buildings are. I actually did meet a few years last owner of the Concord Hotel, who is a member of a white cousin, is president of Northern New Hampshire. So he's still, but they've been fighting around for decades as to what to do with that, and you know, if they'll ever get gambling up there. So that's to the Concord.
Yeah, is there, I forget which road that was up there, but I said hunting up in that area. That's how I knew where they were. You had the Concord and the Granite. They weren't too far away from each other, as I remember.
Yeah, that's correct. I don't know exactly where they were, because at the time I didn't drive. I went up there by bus, and I think the bus just got off Route 7 to Monticello exit, made a right turn, and there it was.
Okay. Yeah. I'm trying to think of. Now, up where I used to go, I went hunting a couple of times with some friends of mine. We weren't too far away from a place that you have to be as old as I am probably to remember it. Peg Leg Bates' resort, which is up there, catered primarily to a black clientele. Peg Leg Bates was a man that lost his leg somewhere along the line, but learned how to tap dance with the one leg.
I think that one was before my time, but I do remember a lot of the old Borschtfeld hotels, and I went to my day.
Yeah, they were very popular up there for years. What they called the Borscht Belt, I guess, for lack of a better term, up there. The one that was the farthest west was Grossinger's. That went out quite a few years ago. The last time it was up there, I think they put some sort of condos in on the property.
I don't know what happened to it, but I did, a few years before I went to the Concord, I went to a singles weekend at the one thing I remember, very religious crowd there. So that one went out fairly early. You know, I don't remember. I mean, hotels like that also up in New Hampshire. Like synagogue is not the extent. So still had a good crowd.
Yeah, there's still a number of small places up there that cater primarily to the Hasidim.
Oh, yeah, well, in the Catskills, all the bungalow colonies just about, or the ones that that still exist, were sold to Orthodox groups or Hasidic groups, and they are, you know, they're the ones that go... that go there now, and it's fairly big business for them. W2OSR, W2WLQID.
Okay, and this is W2OSR. Yeah, actually, there was one wall up there that I used to go to when I was driving. I worked as a field service engineer, and I covered most of New York State. So I was going up and down 17 quite a bit, and there was one wall there. I used to see a lot of Hasidic people. That was the Apollo Mall. I think it's gone now. There wasn't much there. It really fell on hard times.
Yeah, all of the Catskills fell on really hard times, and it's come back a little bit, but nowhere near where it was. I mean, like I said, if they could ever get to some other things, might have a, because it's I wouldn't say picturesque, it's nice, and it's fairly close to the city, which a lot of resort areas are.
I think, as you said, it was fairly close to the city, it was out of the city, you know, and a nice place to be in the summer, and there were lots of buses that would take people to and from those resorts up there. But now people have gotten a lot more mobile, and they, you know, spread out further. So a lot of those places haven't done that well.
Yeah, the places that could sort of reinvent themselves for something else have done a little better. You know, I said the White Mountains of northern New Hampshire, where we've gone much more recently, had a similar fate, but they've reinvented them for hikers and outdoors people. Better.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I've done a little bit of hiking up in New Hampshire when I was younger and my knees still worked. my wife and I took, where did we go? I'm trying to remember where we went in New Hampshire. Anyway, it's a fairly popular area. We went up there and we hiked a couple of different things and went up to, a little bit more towards the western side of New Hampshire. Just about every time I go up to Boston, I get in the car and I go up to Salem, New Hampshire, to where there's an HRO store.
Yeah, well, where we go is much closer to the flume. I know exactly where that is. That's in Franconia Notch, and that's great hiking there. Yeah, my wife and I are probably in the same situation as far as hiking, but usually we find something that's fairly level where we can just enjoy the outdoors. In fact, we're trying to figure out now to get book a condo in a place called Waterville Valley late September, early October, just for a week, which is normally a ski resort. We don't ski, but activities there, and around that time is when you have great fall foliage. So that attracts a lot of people to northern New Hampshire.
Oh, yeah, there's lots of pretty areas up there. I know as a kid, my parents would vacation in Vermont, which isn't all that far away. This year, my wife and I are planning on going up to the Thousand Islands for about a week. That's if we both get healthy enough. about a week and a half ago, I broke a toe on my left foot, so I'm hobbling around a little bit. They tell me I should be healed up by the time the vacation comes along.
Yeah, hopefully you will. You probably will. The Thousand Islands is a beautiful place. I don't know if I've been to law school in Syracuse in the mid to late 70s. And there's, of course, a good deal over there, but we did met the countryside when my nose wasn't in all the time.
Yeah, well, as I said, with the job that I had, I covered, I had a pretty big territory. About once a month, I would go upstate New York and handle the accounts that were up there. So I got to know New York State pretty well. I've been in a lot of different places. I was mostly going into hospitals and universities that were scattered throughout the state.
Yes, you probably to Upstate Medical Center, which was, well, it used to be part many moons ago, Syracuse. Then when I was there, it was part of the city.
Yeah, I had a couple of customers at Upstate Medical Center, Syracuse. Probably Upstate Buffalo and Ithaca were the two biggest, busiest areas for me.
Yeah, Upstate is beautiful in the summer, but you gotta look at snow when it's, in the winter, and it's a very, very economically depressed area. I mean, when I was up there, you could see the pictures of it, and it's gotten actually worse since.
Yeah, one of the ways I used to go into Ithaca, I went through a lot of towns that had been very big at one point, and they, most of the buildings were empty, and there were very few people left living there.
But yeah, I mean, we noticed the same. I went to Binghamton as an undergraduate, and when I went there, there was a lot of industry. In fact, we used to jump much defense industry.
I remember when I would come across on 17 coming into Binghamton, just about where 81 came in, off on the right-hand side up in the hill was Singer, part of the Singer Sewing Machine Company, but they weren't doing sewing machines there. They were doing military electronic stuff. Well, the people up there don't like to recognize it as being part of the state university. They call it Binghamton University. I know exactly where you mean. When I had to go in there and do service calls, I'd stay out in Vestal.
Oh, that's where the university was. When I was there, I had a friend who was in the computer school, which was in its infancy when I was there, and his first job was for... Rink, they called it. That one of my son's first job, both of them, was for IBM, and even though they worked remotely, they were based in Endicott, and by the time they started in 09 and 60, IBM had a big complex of, I don't know, 12, 15 buildings, and maybe about one was used, and the rest of them were just empty and rotting away.
Another one of the routes I would take is if I was going into the State University there at Binghamton, and then I had to go up to Ithaca, I'd go out a little bit further west and go up through Owego and go through some of the back roads there up into Ithaca. And that wasn't too far away from Endicott and Johnson City, where IBM had a big presence.
Yeah, I remember those routes too. Like I said, when my kids were there, IBM had very little presence left. You know, IBM actually started in Binghamton, believe it or not. That was their point of origin. And, I also took, I think it's Route 86 that goes from a wheel or something like that to Montour, past the falls, and, those are...
W2OSR, W82WLQ, I think. Okay, and W2OSR. We timed that right with the repeater ID. I'm going to say 7-3. I'm just about where I'm going tonight. I'm going to a meeting of the NASA Amateur Radio Club here in Eisenhower Park. And I'm just about at the park entrance. Take care. Hope to catch you again, W2OSR.
Okay, 7-3. Good talking to you. And, you are clear on listening.
K2KMB, WB2CSC.
Fly Mark InfoNet tonight at 8:30. This is the W2...
FIU.
KD2 FIU, testing.
Testing. Test 1,
2, 3. KD2 FIU.
Sounds good over there, just over here, George. KD2 FIU, KB2.
Thank you for coming back. That, you know, I was testing, I was watching it, but it's nice to hear somebody give the report. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, what was wrong? Just curious, what were you checking out?
I just set up an old radio. It's about 20 years old. I just wanted to make sure I got audio and power right. I haven't been about 6 months, and I bring it out every once in a while. I was having a rough time the last couple of weeks on the Monday night net. For some reason I was dropping out, and I don't think it's my station, but just for the heck of it, on a different power supply, different transceiver, different microphone, everything is different here. So it is what it is right now. And I'm holding the repeater as long as I can to see how long I can hold it before I time it out.
So you know, you're talking about dropping out like your voice just dropped out of the repeater. I noticed that very slightly that go around. So I don't know. It almost sounds like, you know, maybe deviation too high, you know, that kind of thing. You drop out altogether, but...
Okay, I pulled back on the gain. KD2 FIU, the microphone gain is lower. Should be a little softer. And dropout, no dropout. Dropout, no dropout. KD2 FIU, am I dropping out?
HHU, no, that was fine in that go around. Yeah, you can definitely sound it was a little softer. No, I don't really have anything to check deviation right now to see. Maybe you were just a little right on the edge of the bandpass that were filtering. Who knows? But yeah, I had, you know, that definitely was solid.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out how to get into the menu of this radio and adjust the transmit bandwidth. Do I really want to get out the manual? Yes. This ham admits he's got to get the manual out. 82 FIU.
Well, I remember years ago. I guess they still exist. For the manuals for the radios. I remember there was this one guy. He was selling these clip notes, kind of deal for ham radios. You know, these cards where they had basically the nitty gritty on how to do simple functions and a couple of steps. Instead of whipping out the whole manual to read it, you bought this card from him, and it looked really cool, so, you know, nice, easy reading. So I don't know. I don't know if that still exists anymore at the ham fest.
Which cards you mean? As a matter of fact, up until a few years ago, I used to see them in the accessory extension to radio outlet model descriptions, where they would give you the accessories, and toward the end of the accessories there would be that, I forgot the name of those cards, good point, and I don't see them anymore.
Yeah, no, I remember that. I remember, you know, they were really, if you really wanted a simple thing to read, it was kind of nice, almost like, they made it, colorful and the whole thing, almost like, when you're on the airline and you want to find out the emergency exits and how to, put on your life vest, that kind of, that kind of look to it. But it did the job, though. I mean, you wanted to know the functions of memories and setting tones and all that other stuff. It's kind of clear. Yeah, I don't know. Okay, so you don't see it either. Okay, then I didn't miss it.
Yeah, well, I just found the receive filtering, narrow filtering, and let's see if I can find a transmit narrow filtering. This is a 706 Mark II G. KD2 FIU.
Yeah, KB2HHU. Well, usually it's when you, you know, usually when you go to sideband, when you go from sideband mode to FM, sometimes you're a little hot. I've heard that from people there. But, oh well. I'm sure that somewhere there, you may be on the edge of getting that manual. I don't know. It gave me two changes.
Thank you. W2ZVT.
KD2FIU.
And KD2NSJ. Any corrections or additional...
Radio Newsline report number 2280. Communication systems with Switzerland.
Aldo, who was also an avid DXer and DXpeditioner, died knowing he had been chosen to receive the honor. In an emotional ceremony recently in Miami, Florida, it was presented to his niece, daughter, and sister by Ramon Santoyo, XE1KK, the current president of IARU Region 2. The award was created in 2012 and bears the name of VK3KI in recognition of his years of service and his giving spirit to amateur radio. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jason Daniels, VK2LAW.
It's tea time. Here's a special event you might enjoy that deep in some interesting and fun history. Jim Dameron, NATMW, explains.
If chasing special event stations is your cup of tea, you might want to check out what's going to be brewing between August 1st through August 8th. Hands around the country will be calling QRZ on all bands using all modes to celebrate the world's largest teapot. You heard that right. The celebrated teapot stands 14 feet high and 14 feet in diameter in northern West Virginia near the border with Ohio. And the special event coincides with the annual Teapot Festival in Chester, West Virginia on August 7th. The local club organizing the event, the Hancock Auxiliary Communications Team, will be using the call sign W8T and will be operating from the site of the teapot itself. There will also be a bonus station, WB8HAT. This is the fifth year for the special event, but according to one of the organizers, Justin Shaw, W8LPN, this is the first year there will be 10 stations activating using W number T call signs from all call areas around the country. Contact with all 10 gets chasers a clean sweep. Known as a full cup, hams contacting all stations plus the bonus station are eligible for a full pot. Information about certificates is available on the QRZ page for W8T. Even if tea isn't your bag, you may find the history of this beloved symbol compelling. Its humble origins date to the years before World War II, when it began life as a wooden barrel used in a root beer advertising campaign. A handle and spout were later added, and reborn as a teapot, it enjoyed subsequent roles as furbished. It was rededicated in 1990 as a beloved symbol of local identity. It has since inspired the annual festival in August, where proud residents can share that their cup. Jim Dameron, NATMW.
Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the K5 DUR repeater in Dallas, Texas, Sundays at 7 p.m. local time. In the U.S., the state of Missouri is turning 200 years old, and hams there have a capital idea for celebrating. It involves, of course, the state's earliest capital. Randy Sly, W4XJ, brings us up to date.
While Missouri has always been called the Show Me State, from August 7th through the 14th, it will become the Hear Me State. In celebration of the state's bicentennial, special event station K0B will be on the air, sponsored by the St. Charles, Missouri Amateur Radio Club. Event organizer Jim Briggs, KK0GT, told Amateur Radio Newsline that in addition to operating from various members' homes, K0B will have a station located at the SCARC Hamfest in O'Fallon, Missouri on August 8th. On August 10th, they will be on the air at the site of the first Capitol building in Missouri, located in the St. Charles Historic District on the west bank of the Mississippi River. This is the first time an amateur radio station has operated at this site. The building served as the state capital from 1821 to 1826. K0B will be active on single sideband, CW and FT8, on 80 through 6 meters, as well as 2-meter FM simplex. A special paper QSL and a downloadable PDF certificate will be available. Watch the SCARC Facebook page for an operating schedule and more information. Also be on the lookout the rest of this year for more special event stations as Missouri celebrates 200 years. For Amateur Radio Newsline, this is Randy Sly, W4XJ.
Members of the Bellbrook Amateur Radio Club in Ohio are mourning the loss of an amateur who was remembered as not just a friend, but an educator and mentor. Fred Stone, W8LLY, became a silent key on July 26th. He'd been ill with pancreatic cancer. Fred was well known as an active participant in public service activities, including ARIES, and he had been a district emergency coordinator for District 3 for many years. Many hams recalled him in comments on the club's Facebook page, crediting Fred for providing the gateway to amateur radio for them. In the world of DX, JA1 Tokyo is on the air, marking the Olympic and Paralympic Games that opened on July 23rd in Tokyo. Each band has been assigned its own operator. The station will remain active until the 5th of September. There are also 10 mobile stations with the call sign 8J Olympic at each regional headquarters of the Japan Amateur Radio League, and 8NOLP will be on the air as well at a higher output. No QSL cards are required. EQSLs are being accepted. For QSL certificate and awards information, follow the link in the printed script of this newscast at arnewsline.org. R3RRC-0 will be operating from Farragelm Island, the southernmost island in Russia, between July 31st and August 4th. Maxim, RU5D, Gennady, R3BY, and Vitaly, R0MR, will be using R3RRC-0 as well as their personal call signs, RU5D-0, R3BY-0, and R0MR-P, respectively. Be listening on 40 to 10 meters, where they'll be using CW, SSB, FT8, and FT4. Harold, DF2WO, will be in Kigali, Rwanda, using the call sign 9X2AW between September 13th and 28th. He'll be using CW, SSB, RTTY, and FT8 on 20, 17, 15, and 10 meters. QSL directly his home call sign. Bo, OZ1DJJ, will be on Tasiilaq Island using the call sign OX3LX between July 28th and August 13th. He'll be found mainly on 6 meters and 4 meters, but will also be on some VHF bands. Send QSL to OZ0J. And Amateur Radio Newsline is proud to announce the winner of the 2021 Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Memorial Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year. Newsline's Mark Abramovich, NT3V, chairman of the award program, is here with the story.
Wow. Thank you. That's pretty cool.
That's a reaction from Faith Hannah Lee, KD3Z. I'm learning she had been chosen as Newsline's Young Ham of the Year. Faith Hannah is 16 and the daughter of James, WX4TV, and Michelle, N8ZQZ, Lee, of Palm Coast, Florida. Faith Hannah says her parents were a big influence in her entry into the world of amateur radio, starting in December 2014 at the age of 10.
So I started studying for my technician license along with my brother, and we both went in and got it. And 2 weeks later, I had earned my general. And then 2 months later, I earned my extra. So that allowed me to really get into the stuff that I liked, which was working HF.
Only 18 months after being licensed, Faith Hannah was invited to the 2016 Dave Coulter Memorial Youth DX Adventure operating PJ6 from the Dutch island of Saba.
And that's when I realized, especially, that DXing is amazing because I absolutely love those huge pileups and getting to talk to all those different people, because I'm not entirely sure why, but I love being at the calling end of a big pileup and just running it as fast as I can, which is probably why I enjoy contesting.
Among her PJ6 achievements was a satellite contact that broke the SO50 distance world record. In August 2018, Faith Hannah took part in the Youngsters on the Air program in Johannesburg, South Africa, for a week-long stay that featured kit building, an antenna building, satellite operations, and a high-altitude balloon launch. But on the way to South Africa, Faith Hannah and her father had a 22-hour layover in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates. While on the ground in that Middle Eastern country, she visited and operated A62A and A60YOZ, activated by the Emirates Amateur Radio Society. In December 2018, Faith Hannah, her father, and her younger sister, Hope, ND2L, took part in the N4T mini-D expedition to the Dry Tortugas in the Gulf of Mexico. While there, the girls made 1,970 HF contacts and 100 satellite contacts during the 36-hour operation on the island. Her account was published by CQ Magazine, and she got the April 2019 cover with her sister. Faith Hannah has been involved in several special event and contest operations with her family and continues to remain active in promoting the hobby to youth. She completed high school through homeschooling, but before doing so, applied for and was accepted at Daytona State College, where she earned an Associate of Arts degree at 15. Now, at 16, she's enrolled in Stetson University in DeLand, Florida.
Right now, two different bachelor's degrees. One is a bachelor in science for molecular and cellular biology, and another is a bachelor in business administration.
Faith Hannah will have no problem contributing to her education. She placed first in Florida's statewide competition and second in the National Veteran of Foreign Wars Essay Contest, earning a $16,000 scholarship. She said she's exploring two career tracks right now, medicine or the law, or possibly both. As for amateur radio, Faith Hannah says there's always time for that.
I know this sounds weird, but it doesn't really take all of my time to do my school, to have fun, and to do ham radio. It all just fits in perfectly because a lot of times if I'm getting on the radio and it's not a contest, I'll just do it like in the evening when Grayline's there, because that's usually when I'm free, and it's a great time to make contacts. And if it's a weekend, we might take a radio and go out to a park or something and get on the air, and then once it starts dying down, we'll just hang out around the park for a couple hours.
You can follow Faith Hannah and her family on their hamradio.world YouTube channel, where you'll see her brother, Zachariah, WX4TVJ, and sister, Grace, KE3G. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mark Abramovich, NT3V.
Because of a spike in the Delta variant of COVID-19, Amateur Radio Newsline will not be publicly presenting the award at the Huntsville Hamfest this year. Instead, we'll do it virtually, and you'll be able to see it here on our website, arnewsline.org. Follow us for details when you can see it. With thanks to Ars Technica, Amateur News Weekly, the ARRL, Bellbrook Amateur Radio Club, the BBC, CQ Magazine, David Behar, K7DB, ZXWorld.net, IARU Region 2, IEEE Spectrum, the Japan Amateur Radio League, Justin Shaw, W8LPN, QRZ.com, the Southgate Amateur Radio News, shortwaveradio.de, St. Charles Amateur Radio Club, Ted Randall's QSO Radio Show, USKA, WTWW Shortwave, and you, our listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. You can write to us at newsline at arnewsline.org. For more information or to support us, visit our official website at arnewsline.org. Be sure to follow some of these stories as they get a more in-depth look on the YouTube channel of 100 Watts and a Wire. Search for the video segment with the title, Two Stories. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the News Desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in Picayune, Mississippi, saying 7-3. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2021. All rights are reserved.
Hi, Mark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the W.
FIU, KD2OGB Mobile. You there, George?
Fly Mark InfoNet, tonight at 8:30. This is the WGL repeater.
W2VL. Is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. The time is 12:04 a.m. 73 and good night from the W2VL repeater. This is the W2VL repeater. Good morning. The time is 5:00 a.m. W2VL.
W2VL. L.
And to ZUC listening.
W2VF.
And to ZUC, KTK.
Good afternoon, Richie. How are you?
Doing good. What about yourself?
I'm good. My wife and I went to the pool today. Got my exercise in. They have indoor, outdoor. I don't like to go outside unless the weather's nice. So there was no sun, so I went inside.
Do you have to make an appointment, or you can just go down there now?
No, you can go anytime you want. I think they did have sessions early on. We only signed up again about a month ago because, I think I'd mentioned they had no locker use, no shower use, and I had called up and they, oh, everything's open night, come on down. So we signed up again for 6 months.
Oh, so they're back with the showers and things too?
Back 100%. That's Echo Park in West Hempstead.
Okay, well, that's a good thing. It happens in the next couple of days. A mask over your body, I think.
No, I don't think it'd be that bad. So News 12 just said 20% chance of rain for Sunday. That's not so bad.
Yeah, I'll have to look at that closely. We may not buy everything until Saturday so that it remains fresh. Have some time. 20%, yeah. Like to hear any percent.
I think it was going to be 87 for the high temperature was.
All right, well, that's good. Yeah, well, again, you know, we have considerations. We set up stations, antennas, make sure that the weather is good for that also.
Well, today's Tuesday, so it could change one way or the other by then.
Yes, I'm sure, as is always the case with weather. But we'll see.
I know. Is IRLP back in service?
Wait, I'm sorry, is what back in service?
IRLP on the transmitting side.
Yeah, when was it out? And you're talking about on the 440 machine.
I have yet to make a contact on that. I had a discussion with Lou a month ago or more. I haven't tried it since about, they may not be hearing you, that's why nobody answers you. But I don't hear anybody talking on it either.
Yeah, there was a problem. It's just a kind of a connector thing, but I believe it's 6. It should be up and running, as far as I know now, with no problems. And you know what? Everything's quiet. I think, I don't know, played out. I'm not sure.
And Sue's at you, sir. So I went through my regular routine. I went through 20 listening, nothing happening, because a couple of Spanish-speaking stations. Other than that, I didn't hear anything.
Yeah, someone else was saying this morning, DMR was quiet, K5 repeater was quiet, but, you know, that runs in cycles. Maybe a lot of people are away for August.
Now, I'm not in DMR, but correct me if I'm wrong. In order to use DMR, you have to be near, let me turn this 220 down. You have to be near a repeater that's a DMR repeater, or hooked up to a computer, or have a hotspot. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah, if you're close enough, you'll go in by RF. And if you're not close enough and using a hotspot, then you're going into...
And with the hotspot, you could have a hotspot and be out in the desert and you could still get into it?
Yeah, I missed one word there. You could have a hotspot, something, and then you could still get into it?
Well, I said desert, but I'll change it to no man's land.
Yeah, it's my hearing's going on. Again, not sure what you're asking. If you're on an RF, obviously you have an RF link. When you do it with a hotspot, you are generally connecting your RF radio to the hotspot, and then the hotspot is going out over the internet into the system, Brandmeister, I guess, and that's connecting you up to your...
So now you're bringing in the computer again. You say to the internet. So you have to be near. You have to have Wi-Fi capability. Then.
Yes, all of those modes, IRLP, Echolink, all rely upon the computer from one location to another. And for most of them, it's just a matter of how did you connect. Do you connect to RF or do you connect to another computer? So with DMR. The ability to get into the DMR system and then talk around the world, well, getting into the DMR repeater is the RF. Well, I guess you have to figure RF, and then after that, everything else is computer.
I've heard people say that they put a hotspot in the car and they could travel around and get on DMR.
Right. Well, what they're doing is they're hooking their hotspot up usually to the cell phone unless they have an additional hotspot. The hotspot... In this case, what's making the link between your radio and the DMR system, but you still need the ability to get out to the internet.
So if you have a cell phone, you could get to the internet via the hotspot and a cell phone?
Yes.
So as long as you have a signal on your cell phone, then you can go anywhere and get on DMR.
Yes. Now, I haven't used the hotspot myself, but I guess get to, well, maybe you have to pre-program in the frequencies of the stations that you're hitting. I don't know if you can just arbitrarily go to any station. Yeah, I'm not sure on that part. I'm not sure what actually shows up when you do the hotspot. But the other thing with the hotspot is that I think they also do DSTAR. And some of them may even do fusion. No matter what system you have, they're working for you.
Yeah, it sounds a little complicated. But I do have, and once in a while I play around with, on my Android cell phone is Peanut. You familiar with Peanut app?
Again, I missed a part of what you said. The Android cell phone, did you say?
Correct. The Android cell phone with this Peanut app. That I got involved in. You have to be registered with DMR and DSTAR and be a ham to begin with. And then you can go on there and use your cell phone. It's a hit or miss. It depends if someone's on or you put the call out on different, I forget what they call. And it can be worldwide, as a matter of fact. I have spoken to people outside the country. It's a lot of fun. It's not a guaranteed thing. You take a chance to see if anyone answers or anyone's on and so on. So it's a fun thing to keep you busy, but it's not the same as the DMR, I'm sure. And they have DSTAR, DMR, and I guess certain repeaters. It's fun.
Yeah, I think for many people, you know, there are some purists who say, oh, it's not RF. Well, you know, the bottom line is, when the propagation is really bad, what are you supposed to do, sit around and twiddle your thumbs? You have other alternatives to at least keep you active, stay in the hobby, and keep interested. So there's nothing really wrong with it. But again, what you're doing is, I believe, just linking in computers that are running the programs, and then once you're into the computer, you can determine where, in most cases, I guess you can determine where you're going to go out, but in some cases, determine for you may not have the choices.
Of course, what's good, someone's located with HOA restrictions, no antennas outside, they have to be relegated to internet, and DMR comes into play, and so on. And down in Delaware, they're big on Yaesu fusion and wires or something like that. And that's computer-based as well, with ham radio.
Yeah, all of them rely on it. It's just some of them do it differently, and I always forget with wires. But wires, I think, depending upon every station actually becoming a part of the system, as opposed to having one repeater like WAK or Limark, whatever. But my first the first realization of the value of something like Echolink was years ago. I forget if I was on RF or if I was on Echolink. I think I was on RF and talking to someone on